Welcome to Fact or Fiction, history stuff for the history buff on HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined today, as usual, by staff writer Josh Clark.
Hey, Candace.
Hey, Josh.
Candace, who are you going to vote for? I'm kidding. I wouldn't really ask you that. Although I did hear recently that there were some Hillary supporters who said that they intended to vote for Hillary in the general election. Have you heard about that?
No, I heard there were some Hillary supporters who were going to vote for McCain.
And some who will vote for Obama too, sure. But there are some who plan on voting for Hillary. And of course, you say, why would you do that? That's a waste of a vote, right?
Sort of like a vote for someone like Bob Barr, someone who's not one of the two major parties.
Right, or Ross Perot, who I heard was considering throwing his hat in the ring.
Why not?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, is it a wasted vote? I've spoken to my wife about this. She's voted third party before, and I'm like, wow, you really wasted your vote, didn't you? And I think her response was something along the lines of, how is it wasting a vote when I'm voting for the person I want to vote for rather than voting for someone I don't really like to defeat someone I like even less? You know, a vote's a personal thing. It's not to be used strategically. So I see that. And, you know, my hat is off to the Hillary supporters who are going to vote for Hillary no matter what. You know, they're going to have to write her in. But it kind of brings up this question of, you know, just how much does a vote count? Like, you know, there's been several instances in the history of the U.S. where people have voted for one of the two major candidates. And, you know, one of them gets the most votes but still doesn't win the presidency. You were around in 2000, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just a baby, but I was here.
Do you know much about the 2000 election?
Yeah, I do, actually. It all boils down to the fact that Gore won the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
And
by like 500,000 votes, mm-hmm. which is pretty close because there's like 100 million votes cast that year.
And then Bush went on to win the vote from the Electoral College.
Yeah.
And it's funny because predictions said the exact opposite would happen, that Bush would win the popular vote and Gore would get the votes from the Electoral College.
Yeah, because this was back before, you know, Gore was the environmentalist that he is, or at least as well known as the environmentalist that he is. And I remember him being looked upon as fairly stiff. There's this great Simpsons episode where Lisa Simpson buys one of his books, and the information that his book's been purchased was transmitted to the White House, and somebody comes running in and goes, Mr. Vice President, someone actually bought your book. And he goes, well, this calls for a celebration. And he turns around and puts the needle on a record player, and it's Cool and the Gang, Celebrate Good Times. And
oh.
He goes, I will. So he's kind of a stuffed shirt. So I'm surprised he got
like
the popular
the
vote,
Gore
too.
I like the Gore of yore. I liked him better. He was sort of a solid wall of man, and now
yeah.
he's very
He's gotten
very
kind of
earthy.
Granola-y.
Yeah, and he's, I don't know, gotten a little softer.
Well, you know that 2000 election was determined by two lawsuits that were filed in Florida. Florida was the point of contention for the whole thing. Gore wanted a recount of the popular vote, and Bush didn't want one. So they sued one another. And sued the state of Florida because you remember this whole box of votes went missing from the polling station to the counting station, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bunch of contention and everything. Finally, the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, Florida, you can't extend the deadline for the votes to be counted, which meant that a recount wasn't possible. And, you know, by proxy, Bush won the state and the election, which kind of leads me to my question. Is it fact or fiction that my vote, your vote, anyone's vote doesn't really count?
That's a really tough question. And
Thank you.
I can't be Miss History today. I think that that's really an ideological debate. But I will be Miss History for a few minutes, actually. I can't say whether
it's fact
or fiction.
You won't even give us a faction?
I'll say it's faction.
Okay.
There you have it. It's faction.
Thank you.
It all boils down to the actual creation of the Electoral College, and it wasn't something that we made up willingly. The framers of the Constitution put the Electoral College in place, and it was sort of a compromise between essentially Congress deciding the next president of the United States or a popular vote choosing the next president of the United States. And you have to, you know, sort of put the Electoral College in context and think about the United States as a nascent nation. And essentially, the opinion among the framers of the Constitution was that people in general were not educated and informed enough back then to...
This is definitely before Al Gore invented the internet.
Precisely. To really make a good choice, a good, sound, informed choice for the president. There wasn't this widespread dissemination of information. You know, today you can go on the internet, copyright Al Gore. You can pick up a newspaper. You can download a podcast. There are so many ways you can find out, you know, what's really going on with the candidates. But back then they thought... people, you know, far flung across the coast wouldn't really know.
So I can see this kind of necessary elitism, right, back then.
Well, I think that's a charged word. Maybe, sure. I don't know if I would say elitism. I would say, I mean, they were doing this as the founding fathers.
Sure.
They were doing it as a fatherly gesture. And you would have to ask yourself, is that still important today? Is that still relevant?
That was the second part of my question,
right.
Is it?
Is it anachronistic? I don't know. Again, I think that's a personal choice. I mean, do you honestly believe that everyone out there voting is making an informed choice? Or do you think people are saying, well, I like Sarah Palin's hair, or I think that Barack Obama's kids are cuter?
Yeah. No, and it does seem like, especially in the circus that the 2008 elections become, it does strike me that people are making kind of shallow judgments about candidates rather than on the issues. And I think a lot of that is coming from the candidates themselves. No one's willing to discuss the issues. I was watching The Daily Show last night, and they had a generic off on the topic of the economy. And they wanted to see who could be more generic. And actually, I think it was a three-way tie between Obama, McCain, and Biden. And Sarah Palin actually came out sounding, you know, the most specific. So I don't think anyone's really discussing the issue. So how can a public be informed about where a candidate stands on the issues if no one's discussing them? At the same time, though, this electoral college that you're talking about, who comprises that? How does that work?
It's made up of electors. And essentially, each state has a number of electors that are equal to the number of representatives in the House,
okay,
and then the number of senators.
So okay,
the number
so
of senators
the
plus
has,
the representatives.
Every state has two senators,
mm-hmm,
and then say a state had five representatives, they'd have seven electoral votes?
Right.
Okay.
Which means that it's a weighted system. If you're a state that has a greater population, you're going to have more say, you know, as far as the electoral college vote goes.
Okay.
So that's why when candidates are out stumping, you hear them, you know, trying to win a state like Ohio, or, you know, it being really important for them to get the public riled up in California.
These swing states.
Right. These are the states that have the most say.
Okay.
Which could be fair or unfair, depending on where you live. I mean, if you're a Californian, you may feel that you're more represented. But if you live in a state with a very small number of electoral votes, mm-hmm, you may feel that your vote really doesn't count. But it boils down to two different types of electoral votes. And the most popular one is called the winner-take-all system. And
okay,
48 states use this. And essentially, when you vote in these states, you're casting a vote for the electors. And then the electors, in turn, cast their vote for the president.
Okay, so
does
I mean,
make sense?
It does, because then, you know, you've cast a vote for, say, the Republican, and you're actually voting for the elector, right?
To vote for the Republican candidate.
Right. Okay. So if enough people elect the Republican, then that Republican elector goes to vote, and so it follows the popular vote, right?
Most of the time.
Well, how when does it not?
When you have what's called a faithless elector, and this is when the elector casts a vote that's different from the popular vote. And most electors won't do this, and there are some states that actually have fines imposed to electors who do. I think North Carolina imposes like a $10,000 fine. But this is a state law, and it wouldn't hold water against the constitutional law, which
sure
says you can't do that. So again, I mean, if an elector wants to be taken seriously and he or she is elected by the state party, they're
mm-hmm
probably going to stay true to that particular party line.
But they could conceivably betray the vote of the people who cast the popular ballots.
Yes.
I gotcha.
Now, the other system that's used in just Maine and Nebraska is called the district system. And this one is like the popular vote. The elector follows the popular vote.
Okay.
So that one's a little bit more closely aligned.
I understand. So I know 2000 wasn't the only election There were three others, as far as I understand, right?
Mm-hmm. That was John Quincy Adams in 1824.
Right.
Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876, and Benjamin Harrison in 1888, all of whom were eventually elected by the Electoral College instead of the popular vote. And, you know, it's funny because today, a lot of those presidents, maybe with the exception of Adams, are sort of not inconsequential, because I wouldn't say any of our presidents has been inconsequential. Everyone's done something to either get people riled up or pacify them,
sure,
or please them. But off the top of my head, you know, I can't name any great successes associated with those administrations. So I don't know. Who knows what would have happened if the popular vote had won? Maybe the tides would have turned in some way for our nation.
Maybe so. Maybe so. That may have happened very recently, too. You never know. And, I mean, what happens when there's a majority as well? I mean, what happens when there's a tie in the Electoral College, I should say? I mean, there has to be a tiebreaker, right?
Yes. Well, sort of. Then the vote goes to the House of Representatives, and that is sanctioned by the 12th Amendment of the Constitution. And there have been two elections in history that have resorted to this, and that was when Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr squared off in 1801. Mm-hmm. Victory went to Tiege.
Yeah.
And then in 1825, when John Quincy Adams competed against Andrew Jackson, and it went to J.Q. Adams.
So what happens in this instance? I mean, like, if the vote goes to the House of Representatives to pick the president, I mean, what happens? Does each state get it one vote, basically?
Yes.
And then you just keep voting if there's a tie?
Yes.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. So this sounds a lot like delegates at a party convention, sort of.
Yeah, and it's something I like to think of it in my mind as the People's Choice Awards versus the Academy Awards. You know, which is more prestigious? I think most of us would say the Academy Awards. You know, people get more gussied up for the Oscars. You know, they're considered a little bit more formal. But, you know, who would you rather be thought more highly of? Your peers, the people who are actually in your industry, or a very well-informed, very educated body of people who know your trade and say you're the best of the best for this?
I still say it's elitist and outdated, but thanks for clearing it up for me.
We'll let our listeners decide.
Of course.
And in case you were wondering how many votes it takes to get the majority from the Electoral College.
I know the number.
Okay. How that?
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I just wanted everyone to know that I knew already.
I know. It's 243.
That's not right.
I was just testing
it's 270.
Okay, and now everyone knows.
Yes. Now we have informed listeners. Go forth and vote. And remember, there's no such thing as a wasted vote, is there, Candace?
No, and you can read even more about votes and whether or not they're wasted when you read How the Electoral College Works on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.